everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy John, engineering and producing the show. Welcome. It is Tuesday, the 16th of July, 2024. We're midway through our 14th year with our radio program. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in Tucson, with now five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. You can listen to our program live anywhere in the world by visiting my website, buckmastershow.com. We're very proud of the fact our content there is many years. We've got many years of content archived, all of our podcasts going back to the first week of January in 2011 when we launched our radio project. When we do our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Barbie Reuter, her affiliation with Cushman and Wakefield Picor began with the firm's opening in 1985, becoming a founding principal in 1992. Following 3 years as the chief operating officer, Barbie was named the president in 2017, then CEO, chair of the board, and designated broker in 2020. Barbie leads the employee-owned commercial real estate firm's activity in southern Arizona and northern Mexico, in Sonora, Mexico. Barbie Reuter is very active in southern Arizona. She's involved with the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. She's the past chair of the Tucson Metro Chamber, and she serves as a director for Sun Corridor, Inc. Along with that, she has, in 2022, she was the head of the board president for something called 2022 Crew Network. Crew, an acronym for Commercial Real Estate Women's Network. Hey, Barbie, how are you?
Bill, I'm great. But, you know, when you talk about how long our company's been open, I think you're outing me on age a little bit.
I'm sorry. As we say on the show here, Barbie, you didn't get off the bus yesterday.
So true. We're going to be 40 years old next year. It's going to be an exciting year for us.
Unbelievable. So what kind of year has it been so far here at the midway point, end of fiscal year, beginning of the new fiscal year? When we look at the commercial real estate picture, how's that picture looking to you?
Steady and really good, I would say, Bill. You know, we expected this year to be about like last year, and looking at our own company performance, which is kind of a reflection of the local economy when you think about how linked commercial real estate is to market dynamics and community well-being, we're up a bit. So a little ahead of what we expected, maybe 6-7%. And I'm hearing from across the market sectors, office, retail, industrial, multifamily, that Tucson's resilient and fairly strong.
How does the very favorable picture, at least for the homeowner who's thinking of selling their home, and prices have certainly been going up on the residential end, how does that impact your business?
I think some of the dynamics, the kind of the market fundamentals, like interest rates and inflation, that drive some of the decisions in the residential market probably relate to the commercial market as well. Tucson often will look at national news or national statistics on how things are performing, and Tucson may be insulated from some of those in some ways because we're just a unique community and a unique environment.
Let's talk about an interest rate environment that has certainly been less, and the way it will be going with interest rate cuts. How's that going to impact the commercial real estate scene, Barbie?
I think everyone's looking forward to some movement by the Fed to improve borrowing rates, and that will flow down to commercial mortgages. They've been at not a historic high, but at a recent year high, which took some adjusting to the new reality. And probably impacted the sale and the investment sale side of the market a bit. You know, we're also in an election year, so there's more wait and see as happens in election years, and what changes might occur in the economy that would impact investment decisions.
Let's go over some of these sectors you mentioned: office, retail, industrial, and multifamily. Let's begin with office. How does that look to you right now?
I love talking about office, and office has taken a hit in the PR world because of work from home and this concern that there's going to be a mass exodus from office buildings. And that's probably the area where Tucson looks the least like what you hear in the national news. I may sound a little bit like a broken record here because I think you've heard me compare the shifts and the disruption in the office market to what happened in retail when e-commerce hit the stage, and some spelled doom and gloom for that sector, and it really became a time of resilience and reinvention, and I see that in the office market as well. Now, because we're not a high commute market and we're not a high high-rise market, we did not experience as much extended vacancy or reluctance to return to office space as we saw in some cities with a stronger urban core or a more concentrated workforce in the urban core.
So people are still working in the office here in Tucson.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Has the you mentioned the retail and where people were moving away from going to the mall. Let's pick up on that a little bit on retail. How is that sector looking, Barbie Reuter?
I would say retail is the strongest of all the sectors in the market right now. Industrial had enjoyed that kind of pole position for some years, and I would say that while the demand is high in industrial, it's somewhat hampered by supply, just not enough space. So retail has really hummed along at a very steady and healthy rate. And then when you look at where we are in the year, in the summertime, there tends to be a bit of a slowdown in decision-making, higher vacations and people just kind of being away from decision-making in the business community. But retailers are really looking to secure their locations and be open before the kind of the strong shopping season begins in the fall.
We've had one of your associates on recently talking about the industrial market and how you've had some of these huge warehouses, Barbie, that are actually being built on spec. Give us an overview of what the latest is on the warehouse and industrial sector.
We have been crying for spec development for years, and the pipeline has begun. I wouldn't say the floodgates have opened, but there are projects that are slated to begin development. We have one client who's got a groundbreaking scheduled for the next couple of months, and that will bring some much-needed industrial and warehouse space to this community. If you talk to the folks at Sun Corridor who do economic development, the manufacturing sector is really leading demand for new jobs and new inquiries in this community, and that's been a shift over the years from what used to be a very high call center market where they converted a lot of industrial buildings to, drop ceiling cube farms where callers would sit and work in an office environment. And so there's a bit of a shift in space demand, and it's creating some opportunities for reuse.
And then there's the multifamily. This is the apartment complexes. How are we doing in that area?
Multifamily, our rents have continued to tick up. We're undersupplied in multifamily. The investment market in multifamily and the apartment market has been significantly hamstrung by interest rates. Just hard to make some of those projects pencil out. And construction costs have impacted the supply side and development as well. But really, there have been no sales this quarter of projects of 100 units or more, those kind of larger communities. A lot of wait and see there, but pretty continuous, steady activity in the smaller communities, particularly where there's an opportunity to do what we call value add or improve the property and add amenities and reach maybe a higher level of renter.
The rent, are the rents stabilizing a little bit, and how do we compare to some of our major areas around, for example, Phoenix? Are the rents still going up, or are they fairly stable right now, Barbie Reiter?
I would say they are ticking up, and although it's hard for renters to swallow increases in rents, when you look at where we stand compared to the competitive set of communities, housing is significantly more affordable here.
All right, Barbie Reiter, always a pleasure talking with you about commercial real estate. Barbie Reiter from Cushman & Wakefield PICOR. Thank you, Barbie.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. All right, we've got Shelley Fishman waiting in the wings. And he couldn't, if he had three thumbs, he would give me a third thumb. It's that big a day on Wall Street. So we'll talk to Shell, who's got a big smile on his face, right after this.
Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is with a big smile on his face. And who wouldn't have a smile on their face if you're an investor? 700 plus points up on the Dow.
And that's just today. Oh. Friday and yesterday were also wonderful days on the market.
What's going on?
Well, a couple of things. We had a very, very good inflation report the end of last week, which brought the inflation rate down very close to where the Fed wants it to be. So everybody started thinking, well, then it's going to be time for Powell to cut interest rates. And he kind of hinted that that's what he was going to do. So that was a good thing. In fact, this morning, I believe it was, he made some remarks, or maybe it was yesterday morning, he made some remarks to reinforce those perceptions. Then, I want to say it was this morning, I'm losing track of time, we got a better-than-expected retail sales number. Why is that important? Number one, because nobody can understand how we could possibly have increasing retail sales. And your guest just before talked about retail, you know, being very, very strong. Mm-hmm. It is. When you have interest rates going up, interest rates higher, and you have theoretically inflation coming down, and that should slow the economy, you shouldn't be seeing better than expected retail sales. But we are. Now, part of that is just because this is not...
It's all counterintuitive.
It's all counterintuitive. The economic rules have been bent in this economic cycle. The inflation is not because of government spending. The inflation was because, for the most part, because of supply-side issues, supply issues due to the pandemic. And so as we climb out of this, all of the economists are scratching their heads and going, well, everything that we were taught, you know, over the past 50 or 60 years doesn't seem to apply. What's more, what we're seeing is a very optimistic investment class right now. All of the indices right now are at record highs. They've never been this high. And we're seeing investment analysts give us excuses why they're not too high. In fact, there was just an investment analyst this morning who said, actually, the price-to-earnings ratio of the Dow, if you look at 12 months in advance, the forward-looking is right where it needs to be. Hmm. Now, I don't believe that, but nevertheless... And what does the Dow do as a result of that? I mean, we're up 720, 730 points on the day. And the rest of the markets are up as well. So what I really wanted to talk about today is not the wonderful equity markets, but fixed income markets. And the reason I wanted to talk about fixed income markets is because there's a very high likelihood that interest rates are going to start coming down as the Fed begins to cut them, and then the marketplace chases the Fed and interest rates actually come down.
So for the investor, how do you lock in higher interest
Bingo.
Rates?
In other words, if you have or need fixed income is part of your investment mix, it strikes me, and you know I don't often give investment advice, that this would be a good time to get with your advisor and figure out whether you need to be locking in some of these higher rates. I saw an ad yesterday.
How high is high?
8% for some annuities.
What?
And 6-7% for CDs.
Whoa.
Now, you know, that's real money.
Yeah.
And so you got to be a little careful because, first of all, fixed income buying normally – I would say go with an index fund or a group of index funds. The problem is all those funds are by definition open-ended, so you're not locking in the rate. To lock in the rate, you have to buy a product. Buying a product means you have to buy either CDs and ladder them so that they create income for you in the years when you need it. In other words, let's say you're going to retire in 10 years, so you buy a 10-year and an 11-year and a 12-year maturity so that in each year that you need the income, those bonds will mature. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is by buying products like either insurance products or annuities. Now, that gets me into a whole other discussion of, are annuities something you should buy? Should you seriously look at annuities? And if so, what's the cautions? The short answer to the question is yes, you should always be looking at the possibility of investing in annuities, because even though they will never, ever in the world be your best investment, they will almost always be your safest investment. Your
kind of your backstop.
The stuff that you can rely on. Mm-hmm. When you buy an annuity, and I don't mean an immediate annuity, I mean either some sort of variable annuity or products like that. Though I'd stay away from index annuities. They come with downsides that are really onerous. But there's a whole plethora of variable annuities that have become manufactured in such a way that they have something for everybody. And again, they will never be your best rate of return, but they come with guarantees that are in fact that. Now, you hear bad things about annuities from people who don't want to sell them. You hear good things about annuities from people who really do want to sell them. Mm-hmm. And the reason people really do want to sell them is they carry very high commissions for the salesperson. Mm. Now, there's several people out there saying, we are fiduciaries, therefore we don't sell those things. Mm-hmm. Well, there's absolutely no connection between a fiduciary responsibility and selling of products. In fact, a fiduciary, if anybody says we don't sell those products ever, then you need to go to somebody else because they are cutting off some real alternatives
opportunities
that might be very, very appropriate in your portfolio. Mm. Now, I can't speak to the general person out there. There is no such thing as a general person out there. But if you get with a really competent financial advisor who acts as a fiduciary, takes your benefit, in consideration ahead of their own, that's what a fiduciary is. And the best way to do that is to work with somebody who has a CFP. Because they're
certified financial planner.
They're required to act as a fiduciary in your benefit, and then get with somebody who's not affiliated with any one manufacturer. In other words, tied to an insurance company, so that what they want to do is push that product. Go with an independent who will give you lots of alternatives and can discuss the benefits and drawbacks of each of those alternatives. That's a good way to take a look at fixed income when fixed income is as high as it is right now, before it goes down, and figure out whether you should have fixed income in your portfolio in the percentages that you have it now, or maybe higher or lower. So making those, I want to call them timing decisions, but this is a fairly obvious timing decision. You never want to time the market. But when you know, because
you
the Fed
know,
chairman
yeah, you know
says,
that the
we're going to cut interest
yeah,
rates,
you know,
and you see
coming.
These things, being advertised at rates that you have not seen in two decades.
Yeah.
This is a time to seriously consider the possibility of locking in some of these rates. And I just think it's something to consider, but not on your own. It's something to
when it
work
says
with a professional.
7 or 8%, is that over a long period of time?
That's an annual rate.
Oh, annual rate.
And they will lock it. You can buy.
It just seems really high.
I know. You can buy, if you buy a 5-year CD that's got a 7 or 8% rate, that means that for the time of that CD each year, you are guaranteed to get that that rate. And because it's a CD, it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
It's guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance, FDIC. That you can buy that at a credit union or a bank. If you buy an annuity that's got a guaranteed rate on the growth, it could be higher than that guarantee, but it could never be lower. And then you can lock in a rate once you start taking income. That's also guaranteed. And, you know, don't go with a fly-by-night company. Go with one of the major annuity. They're always insurance companies. And, you know, you've got part of your portfolio and your retirement absolutely guaranteed. More than 50% of your investment portfolio? No, not ever. Mm-hmm. But sure, it's something to take a serious look at. And don't believe the hyperbole you hear, you know, in ads. Speak to an advisor. Speak to three advisors, you know, and find out what's out there. But I wouldn't delay too long. These rates aren't going to stay that high forever.
All right. Shelley, good advice. Thank you very much.
See you next week.
All right. We will see Shelley next week, midway point of the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition, middle of July. Good time to go over to Green Things. A lot of people had hail damage from the big storm, so this is a perfect time to go over to Green Things and refresh the garden. Green Things is located at 3384 East River Road, and very convenient, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Pretty much everything you could imagine for your garden is there, including great accessories. That's part of the business known as Zocalo Village. Beautiful pottery from all over the world, especially of note, the Talavera pottery from Mexico. John and Jack, the owners, very hands-on. They do all the buying, and it really shows. This is a family-owned business. Their website is greenthingsaz.com, and then the ZocaloVillage.com. They are open daily. They've been in business 53 years. When we do our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We are so blessed here on the Buckmaster Show to have a couple of dozen contributors. One of them, Bill Doley, when I originally brought Bill on the show as our contributor on archaeology, Bill was the then president and CEO of Archaeology Southwest, which is a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the preservation archaeology across the Southwest. In January, Bill decided it was time to retire formally from the leadership position at Archaeology Southwest, but he is still very much involved as president emeritus and senior advisor of the organization. And so he's still sharing a lot of what he knows, his knowledge of the archaeology with the archaeology community and the public. And today, Bill joins us and wants to focus on a project, first of all, in Gila Bend, and then one on the border in Cochise County in the small community of Naco. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great.
You look great. You look like you're rested, but still very much engaged. It's not like you don't have some projects on the boards.
Lots of exercise, both mental and physical.
There you go. Good for you. Let's talk about this first project, Camp Naco. What is that about?
Well, it's a former military camp that was constructed on the border, literally 700 yards away from the border back in 1919.
Wow. And right after World War I.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And it was home to up to 100 Buffalo soldiers, which I can clarify a little bit later on, between 1919 and 1923. And the camp was one of 35 typical or similar camps all across the border from Texas, the Gulf of Mexico, all the way to Nogales in Arizona.
Well, so, I just learned something. Everybody talks about our border security these days. I had no idea that post-World War I, the United States had this whole string of border camps.
Yes. No, it was partly it was to keep people employed after World War I, but it also was response to the machinations of France in Mexico during the World War I.
Mm-hmm.
But because Naco was built of adobe, it's the only one of these 35 that are still in. It's not super intact, but it's in a pretty good condition. And they're really striking buildings. It's quadrangles, and they're, since the early 2000s, I've been working with people down in the Naco Bisbee area to try to keep these buildings standing.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2022, there was real progress. We were designated as one of the 11 most endangered properties in the entire United States by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And then we started getting grants, $8.1 million in grants.
You're kidding. Over $8 million in grants?
Yes.
For this particular project?
For this particular project.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I for years I was got that magazine from the National Preservation Group, outstanding magazine, and every year they would put the top 10 endangered places in the United States, and you're saying this was one of them.
This was one of them.
Wow.
Yes.
So this, you know, this is two decades, Bill, of struggling just to keep the building standing. So how is the $8.1 million in funding going to be used?
Well, not surprisingly, a key part of it is going to go into actually rehabilitating those buildings. And the other elements are to take the 16-acre landscape there and add the things that are necessary to make this a good public facility: parking, community spaces, nature trails. They'll add a library, and they're looking at things like artist spaces. Mm. So trying to make this a place that integrates the community and can become a destination for people to go from local as well, even hopefully nationally, to come to visit this place.
How you mentioned these adobe buildings. How many are there? Did you mention that? How many of the buildings are still standing?
So there were originally, I think, 24.
24 adobe structures.
Yeah.
Wow.
And many, six, seven of them suffered, you know, arson events back in the early 2000s. Oh. So that's the kind of struggle that we've had in the past.
Okay.
But one of the key elements of the interpretation effort that's going to go on here is to celebrate and explore the nature of Buffalo Soldiers in the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a military, back in 1866, right after the Civil War, the government created what was ultimately four separate divisions of these African-American soldiers, but they were led by white officers. So, and that wasn't until 1948, after World War II,
1948?
That President Truman desegregated the military. So there's this deep history of how the military responded by bringing in the African-American population, but then not, you know, integrating them fully into the military until basically the end of the Korean War and onward. So
I wonder if in 1866 some of these, because there were many African Americans fought in the Civil War. I wonder if these were some of the veterans from the Civil War.
That was one of the strong you know, trends in early enlistments, were people who had fought previously. And it was other people who, you know, enlisted their professions as farmer and things like that. So I think it attracted a fairly diverse set of African Americans, but not geographically. They were almost all coming out of the South.
And one of your specialties, Bill, and you've got many, is you're very familiar with setting up nonprofits, and this is going to hopefully that's the way this is going, right?
Yes. There's the NACO Heritage Alliance, which has been, you know, a small player for, you know, since 2008. And now we're building a new board. And that indeed is the place where I'm finding a role. I know I've built Archaeology Southwest from, you know, a one person operation in 1989 up to 24 today. And it's serving it with that vision of how to build a new nonprofit. And we have got some consultants, and it's really off to a great start.
How will it look when people can actually go visit? I mean, what are you envisioning?
Well, we're thinking of the entire complex, the 16 acres, as basically an interpretive facility. And so you'll be able to go and visit the interiors of these spaces. There'll be a museum. There'll be a little library. There'll be a landscape all around it that you can kind of take in the nature of what life was like back there in the early 20th century, and, you know, also contemplate the history of the groups. Imagine 100 African-American people living men living in the barracks there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a non-commissioned officers' quarters and officers' quarters as separate kinds of buildings there. So you'll get a sense, a parade ground. You won't get to see what the restrooms were like because those are being modernized dramatically.
So you have a website?
Yeah, it's Camp Naco AZ, just campnacoaz.org, and you can find out some of the events that they're having down there, which are mostly online right now because mm-hmm. they're about to shift in September to construction and making this place accessible to the public is going to take until literally the end of 2025. So,
yeah, it's interesting. We had a listener who pointed out that a lot of people don't realize it, that after the Civil War, one-third of the cowboys out west here were actually African-Americans. So this is an area that's not had a lot of scholarship directed
exactly.
at it.
And this Camp Naco will be another tool in mm-hmm. sharing that kind of history, which is another thing I'm excited about.
All right. There'll be more after the break. We'll talk more with Bill Doley. Bill is Dr. Doley, President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson. Right back after a short break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. A perfect time of year to take a little road trip over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's about a three-hour drive, depending on where you are in the Tucson area. It won't take you very long. Take a left at Lordsburg. After you take the I-10, then head up the mountain. And here's the payoff. It's cooler. Because of that elevation of 5,000 to 7,000 feet, you're going to enjoy, I always like to say, 10 to 15 degrees cooler, especially this time of year. So start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for more information on your upcoming road trip over to Silver City. Continuing on now with Bill Doley, Dr. Doley, the President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based in Tucson, and Bill was talking in our first segment with him about a real neat project down in Cochise County in the small community of Naco and the restoration of something that was known as Camp Naco, one of 35 similar camps that ran along the entire border. It's really pretty much what's left of Camp Naco is the only one of the 35 camps that are still around. But anyway, they're forming a nonprofit and called the Naco Heritage Alliance, and going, sounds like they're very on track for a really great project. Bill, you also wanted to mention a project up in Gila Bend. What's going on up there?
So we're focused on a 1,000-year-old village that was really thriving, had public architecture called a platform mound and a couple of ball courts. And
yeah, you've talked about ball courts before on the program, but this had a ball court.
Had a couple, two of them, in fact.
Okay.
And active trade from down by Rocky Point with Shell and Salt coming up into the area, going into the area around Phoenix. So it was a very impressive place. And there were some excavations there back in 1958 and 59 that kind of made this place, particularly for its platform mound, stand out. And it was way back in that era that the town of Gila Bend got an interest in, this is a, part of the history of this part of, where we live today. And they've always, since that early time, wanted to create a public accessible interpretive park. So that's a project I'm working with the town of Gila Bend on. We were able to get a $500,000 grant to build on work that had already been done out there. There are some interpretive trails, but it had kind of fallen by the wayside back in 2009. And then, since COVID, we've been working to try and come up with ways to reopen this.
And this goes back, this period of history, back to the 1200s, right?
Well, the village was active in the 1000 to 1100 kind of time frame, but it probably didn't extend into the 1200 AD. So there's some really interesting questions as to why didn't it continue on for the the way some other places did.
So the town of Gila Bend owns the property. That's their footprint, right?
Right. Right.
And so they'd like to see this turned into what?
Well, it would be a public park. You could visit it at no cost. And we're trying to add some new amenities, a restroom, some shade structures and picnic tables and things like that, and connect to the trails that are already developed there. But today, after the show, I'm going to be heading over to Gila Bend and meeting with another community, which is literally right there in adjacent to Gila Bend, which is the San Lucie District of the Tonawatam Nation.
Mm.
So these are folks whose deep history, you know, goes back to this kind of period of time. So what we'll be talking about tonight is the general ideas about what Gila Bend plans to do, and talking about what role do people in the San Luis District want to have in evaluating, participating in this process of developing a public space out there that can be visited.
That's one of the things your organization's really excelled at, is bringing the people who were the original stakeholders to the table to talk about the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what we describe it as, looking for ways to connect places and stories of the past to people and values of the present. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the focus of where we go tonight. And, you know, a lot of these people in the San Luis District know about this place, but some of them don't. And so I'm there to try to start that conversation, or pick up on the, it was a year ago, a little over a year ago, that I made this, the last presentation. And we're also working with the San Luis community to try to create a Great Bend of the Gila National Monument.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not just one place, but a much bigger landscape out there that I think really speaks to the interests of the local people, as well as the Tonawatam community that are out there.
Well, I'm glad you're doing that kind of work. So it sounds like you're very busy in your retirement. Your retirement could be characterized, Bill Doley, as an active retirement, right?
Active.
Yeah.
Occasionally a pinch of stress, but mm-hmm. I'm very much enjoying it, truly.
And the organization, let's talk a little bit about Archaeology Southwest, which is basically your creation. How is it doing right now?
I think they're doing wonderfully. I mean, we have a new CEO, president and CEO, a guy named Stephen Nash, who came down from Denver. But he had a PhD that he earned here at the University of Arizona, so he knows Tucson and the Southwest. And so he's getting to know the great staff that we have there and working on how to, keep the trajectory that we've built over the years moving forward. So I think that and the exciting thing for me is to still be able to connect to that organization with special projects like the one at Gila Bend. That's actually a partnership with Archaeology Southwest and the town of Gila Bend.
And I think one of the things, Bill, that's really made you successful in your career is that you really are a collaborator. You know, your collaboration is built, I think you would agree, on trust. And it's not just something that is built overnight, is it?
Absolutely. I mean, when I look at the projects that I'm most proud of, they probably sometimes have one, two, and even three decades of coming to fruition.
Got to have a lot of patience to be in your career.
And a willingness to listen keep at it.
How about finding more information out about your organization?
So websites are always the probably the easiest way. And we're at www.archaeologysouthwest.org. That's a very long name to spell out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just Google Southwest Archaeology, will come up very, very near, if not at the very top of that search.
And you have some outreach projects, news digests, stuff like that.
Yep. You can get a weekly, it's now coming out on Thursdays, just an update of all of the different things across the country that are relevant to what we call preservation archaeology, this conservation-based approach that we've advocated for, and also information about a lot of other places you can tap into information, and a lot of other people who are doing collaborative work with tribes.
All right, Bill, we'll have you back soon to see how some of these updates are coming. Thanks a lot, Bill Doley. Bill is the President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson. They do great work. All right, on behalf of Dr. Bill Doley and John, engineering and producing our program, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well.